Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Horror Hill. I'm your host and narrator, Eric Peabody. Tonight, I've got a double feature for you with two stories about one of my favorite conversational icebreakers, The Restless Dead. To start, we have I Play Music to the Dead, Today They Played One Back, by Grant Hinton. Sean, an undertaker, always goes the extra mile when preparing the recently deceased for their final journey. For example, he picks a special song for each person as he's tending to them. He knows that they appreciate this, because their spirits sit in and watch him during the process. But one day, his musical selection suddenly changes, and he's about to realize that he's not the only one controlling his macabre musical movements. Then, to close out the evening, we'll crack into Shortcut by Micah Edwards. Long drives can be horror stories all on their own, and are all the worse when stuck in endless traffic. So, while on the way to visit family, Simon jumps at the chance to take an alternate route suggested by his GPS. This new road is surprisingly bereft of other vehicles, but what initially seems like a stroke of luck is about to send Simon down a road of nightmares. You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author Grant Hinton, I give you I Play Music to the Dead. Today, they played one back.
I've always found dead bodies fun to play with. Ever since I was a kid, I've been fascinated. The way the skin changes color, and the body deflates like it's been emptied out. How the eyes always creep open the teeniest bit when you really want them to stay shut. It's creepy, I know. It was my Uncle Tom who gave me this morbid curiosity when he died. I was only 12 at the time. I remember his open casket well. Mom tried to shoo me away from his bloated body and ashen skin. But I saw. She meant well, but from that point on, it was too late. I was hooked. Uncle Tom wasn't glamorous in death. Years of drinking and smoking aged his body from the inside out. I'm surprised the mortician made him presentable. He was a mess. Not like Linda here. She's elegant, refined, equally as dead, mind you, but much more glamorous. I put it down to my playlist. As soon as Linda was brought into the morgue, I had visions of Audrey Hepburn and Gregory Peck in Roman Holiday. She was regally tall, with an angled face and button nose. Frank Sinatra's "Love is a Many Splendored Thing" entered my mind, and I knew, in that instance, that it was perfect for her. I played it on repeat when I prepared Linda for her funeral. Since day one, I found that every person has a song. As I put the small spiked cups under their eyelids to keep them closed or superglue their mouth shut, their melodies create a perfect atmosphere, a resonance to their deaths. The lady next to me smiles and squeezes my hand. I turn and smile back before Linda's hand disappears from mine. I rise from the chair amidst the grieving faces, the chair next to me now vacant, and leave the gallery and Linda's funeral. My job was apparent on the smiling, tear-tracked faces of her family. "They're going to find out that you're not part of the party one day, Sean." I turn to see John, the funeral home owner and my employer, in his plain gray suit and tie. His thin eyebrows rise, and a look of mild concern clouds his face. "They don't see me," I say noncommittally, motioning to the sea of people. Grief blinds them. Plus, I like to observe. I know John doesn't mind, not really. He just has to say it so he can protect himself from any complaints. "I can understand you want to see your professionalism well received, Sean, but don't you think the family deserves the courtesy of knowing it was you who made their loved one so graceful in death?" I don't need to mull over the question. I don't like social interaction. Well, not with the living, anyway. "No, I don't." John chuckles nervously. "I hope they give you the same respect you show them," he says, handing me a plain brown folder. "The dead, I mean. Here, here's your next one. He's waiting downstairs for you. Service is tomorrow at 10 a.m. he says, stuffing his hands into his pockets. I nod, and he rocks up onto his heels. I know he feels uncomfortable around me. Most people do. "Okay, well, if you need anything..." He stumbles, searching for the word behind his awkwardness. Still waiting for the chance to bail, he continues. "If you need any help, you know, with the, client... I'll be here until 2 p.m., so..." I nod again, and he shuffles off. From my pocket, I take a ledger. Written inside is my playlist. In neat letters next to "Love is a Many Splendored Thing," I write, "Linda Schooner," then place it back inside my pocket. The corridor displays calming picture quotes en route past the offices. "We know you'd be with us today if heaven wasn't far away. Give all your cares and worries to God, for he cares about you." I've always found them artificial. The elevator pings at my touch and opens. I notice a picture missing off to the right. A fresh square of paint is a window of age. I don't recall what was there before. Instead, deciding to shrug it off. As I ride down, I open the folder. It details the next client, Jordan Grant, and the wishes for their presentation. Outside the morgue is his economy package casket, compressed MDF wood with a rosewood timber veneer. My hands inspect the cotton lining inside. It's simple, elegant, and much better than a sealed casket. No one likes an exploding coffin. Through a heavy, lead-based door is my domain, the morgue. It's chilly, but I've become accustomed to it. My hands are steadier in the cold, and it's better to work with, too. Jordan notices me as he sits in a chair off to the side. His gaze flicks back to his earthly body lying on my table.
"What happens now?"
he asks. They all ask the same thing, something else I've become accustomed to. I lay the folder on his chest and peel back the cloth over his face. A small gasp escapes his lips. "It's never easy to see, but don't worry. I'll have you looking better than you did in life." I smooth back his hair tenderly. He whimpers and buries his face in his hands. "Tell me," I ask, drawing him out of his misery, "what is the earliest thing you can remember?" I take the iPod off the desk and scroll through the songs marked Preparation Playlist. Jordan looks about wildly and then stutters,
"I don't know. How about the fact that I'm dead? That's my body lying on the table."
Anger. I've become accustomed to that, too. My finger hovers over a song. Jordan shakes his head, his frustration abating.
"We had a swing in our backyard,"
he says, eyes closed tight, as if the image will slip away if his eyelids don't hold on to the memory.
"My older brother used to push me when our parents were fighting."
My finger continues to hover. I know it's the right song. I just need Jordan to know it too.
"Once they were having a huge argument. Sam, my brother, took me out back and placed me on the swing. I was too young to know why he did it, but I'll always remember the sadness on his face."
I let my finger drop, and the song starts. Meanwhile, back at Mama's, by Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. Jordan looks up as the pluck of a guitar fills the air, the calming melody enlisting an irrevocable homely feeling inside. He smiles and continues on.
"He must have really been worried that day because he pushed me a bit too hard and I fell off the swing and broke my arm. Our parents rushed out and took us to the hospital. I think Sam saved our family that day. Mom and Dad were so busy worrying about me that they stopped arguing. I remember them looking at each other like it was the first time."
"Did you save their marriage?"
"They're still together to this day, if that's what you mean. But I don't know. Sometimes it's like they're existing. I'll always be grateful, though, for what Sam did."
I let the silence fall. I want Jordan to hear the song. I want him to feel it. My hands work at his face, extracting all the glop and goo from his death sweat. Then, I stuff the nostrils and throat with cotton and start sewing the mouth. Jordan watches, but he doesn't really see me. He's lost in the song. Suddenly, it jolts to a stop. The iPod loops and it starts to play again. We look at each other as the pluck of a guitar fills the air. Tim begins to sing, and we relax. It speaks of family, of hard work and good times.
"Will I go to heaven?" he asks.
I've had the question so many times that I don't reciprocate. It's a dead end for me. If they were a parcel, I am the stamp. I don't know where they are going, only that they will get there. "You look like a good man, Jordan. If I had to guess, I wouldn't be worried if I were you." He nods and continues to watch. Suddenly, the song jumps again. I'm not ready for the second time. My hands, forever steady, pause mid-stitch. Partially annoyed, I lay the thread down. The song changes. A pluck of a high string screams out. A jarring vibration of gravelly bass next. It sounds like nothing I've ever heard before. The notes are atonal, almost, a peculiar screech of strings that aren't tuned. Another pluck of a high-pitched note makes my hands jump. Slowly, I near the iPod. I'm freaking out. More notes add a halting, uneasy manner. The hairs on my arms stand up. Jordan does likewise from his chair. The haunting melody rises. Voices add to the devilish tune. Guttural moans and nightmarish screams weave into the melody. As the song continues, I know it's not one of mine. Abruptly, it shuts off, and an echo of sirens stretches out. I'm rooted to the spot, frozen in fear. The sirens snap off. My chest rises rapidly from the echoes of fright. "That," I say, sucking in a deep breath and turning to Jordan, "was very weird." But as I glance around the morgue, it's apparent he has vanished.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Morning arrives in a shade of gray. The window blinds hide the slant of misery from penetrating my living room. The stink of cat piss invades my senses, and I think about making tea. Shabby, tabby, and not too savvy lay around on various surfaces of the room. The latter kicks cat litter over his morning ablutions and joins his brothers. Three cats were probably a bad idea, but one could never fall out of love with a kitty. Yesterday's mishap still plays on my mind as the kettle boils. I've never had a client pop out of existence until after the casket viewing. Jordan's disappearance troubles me, but not as much as the song. I make a cup of tea and sit at my table, iPod in hand and ledger spread out before me. Each song in the ledger I know, as I do each name alongside it. I scroll through the playlist on the iPod, select Meanwhile Back at Mama's, and hit delete. In the ledger, I assign Jordan's name to the song and sit, musing over the rest. My finger scrolls, my eyes search, but I cannot place the weird song. At work, the strangeness persists. The morgue is colder than usual, and there's a weird note in the air, a high-pitched whistle that I cannot source. I shuffle around for a while. Jordan is in his casket on the trolley, looking like the god I promised I would make him. Something about him makes me stare. It's not his hair. Not a strand is out of place. His eyes closed and reserved. His jaw is firm, sewed and glued. It gives his cheeks a roundness of welcome. I edge nearer. The suit is pressed, smart, black. A striking contrast to the white cotton lining, but it doesn't detract from my work. The next step sets my nerves on end. The sound has grown. Dubiously, I lay my head on Jordan's chest and suck in my breath. The whistle is louder, hollow, and inside him. I can't help but slowly hitch up his chest to his neck and then his mouth. It's stronger there, like a kettle on full steam. A drawer clatters open. I blindly search for a knife. I glance at Jordan's impassive face and the amenable smile I've created. With inexorable slowness, I lower the scalpel to nick each stitch on the inside of his lips. But I don't want to undo my work. Instead, I remove his tie, unbutton the shirt, and push the blade through his trachea. A note quivers out like the screech of a deflating balloon. Seconds turn to minutes as I wait for something to happen. but nothing does. I swallow the fear and redress Jordan for his service. I could count the number of times I've missed a service, but the truth is I don't need to. I never have. Even now, with no ghost beside me, I sit at the back of the meager congregation. A lady, his mother, dressed in black, moves forward and cries unabashedly into his chest. A younger lady, possibly his sister, supports the woman and lends her tears. I glance at the seat beside me. Its emptiness is troubling. Jordan should be sitting with me, seeing his family grieve. But he's not. That I cannot understand. I don't hear the song playing softly through the house speakers. My mind is too confused, too stuffed with questions I can't answer. The service concludes, and I stand up to leave, utterly unsatisfied. The office corridor blends with gray carpets and whitewashed walls. The uplifting messages, still in frames, try to coax me out of my stupor. But I don't want to be brightened up. I want the gloom. I want the agony of not fulfilling my service. I want the punishment for not letting Jordan have the resolution he would have wanted. Sean? John's head pops out of his office door, his body slowly following. I got a new one for you, he says, holding out a red folder. A transfer? I ask, puzzled. Yeah, it's not one of ours, Sean. This is a favor from my buddy over at Thamesmead Prison. Convict suicide. This needs to be done ASAP. Details are in there, he says, stabbing a finger at the folder. Before I can say any more, John slips back inside his office and shuts the door. The folder is unusually heavy. Normally, it's a page detailing the attire, casket type, open or closed, coffin type, special details and service requirements. But this is stacked with what looks like photos. The elevator bings and the doors slide open. I step inside. Just before the door closes, I notice another square patch of old paint from another missing picture. I don't remember which one or what it used to say. To the left are two more missing frames, and to the right, only one message remains. Give all your cares and worries to God, for he deserves them. The doors close, and I ride down with my troubled thoughts. The morgue echoes with my footsteps. I place the folder on the bench and heave a sigh. The preparation table is clear of the client, and I wonder where he's been put. I'm in there, says a voice that slides up my spine and tingles my neck. A shiver races back down like I've seen spiders crawl out of someone's mouth. A man is sitting casually in my desk chair, his skinny, hairy forearm propping up a bored, unkempt face. Mats of brown hair frame a brutish set of eyes and a sneering mouth. He's short. I can see that by how his legs dangle off the chair. But I can also see that this has never affected this man. I'm instantly on edge, like a fly caught in a web. How very rude of them, I say with a lump in my throat. I feel like the slightest remark will set this guy off. The metal door clinks open and I pull the sliding bed out. A stench I've only known twice greets me. The first person was homeless. Her burial was paid for by a Good Samaritan. The second was a Jane Doe paid for by some charity. The smell makes my eyes water. I know now why they put him away. Chilling, isn't it? And to think, I rather liked my body. I like this one better, he says, rolling a pen across the desk. My heart grows cold watching. Quickly, to take my mind away from it, I open the folder and read off the report. I gag halfway through. Not pretty, is it? I probably deserved it, though, he says, swinging his legs under the chair. The man hasn't been dead long, 5, maybe 6 hours. The trauma of his death lingers in the red burns around his neck and wrists. Across his forearms, thick welts ooze putrid pus. The marks continue up and over his chest, meeting above the sternum, but it's his back that makes the breakfast in my stomach bubble. Carved into it is a pentagram. Glyphs of some description ring around it like a clock. Each one is festering with maggots like he's been dead for days. I swallow my growing dread. It says here, Killian, that you committed suicide, but it doesn't look like that. My breakfast lunges again. I've never been squeamish before, but this is too much. To hide my unprofessionalism, I cover my face with a mask and place protective glasses on my face and go to the cupboard for supplies. That's right. I had to, you know. He makes a slicing gesture across his neck. To get to meet you. I stop midway through gathering the chemicals I need to purge the body. Me? I ask. Why me? Ah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? See, I heard through the laundry lines that there's this guy that does these funerals, and he can see the people he's burying. Killian idly plays with my teacup. Me, I say, placing the components on a rolling tray. I don't bury, I make ready. I chuckle nervously at my rhyme, but it dies in my throat. Whom have I prepared for you before? That's just it, he says, watching his knees extend as they swing. No one. But I just knew I had to meet you. So I killed myself. He smirks. Something feels wrong. The air is heavy and imposing. The room's warmth adds to the oppressiveness of it all. Killian's arrogant confession fills me with loathing and disgust. It's like he's happy to be dead, and I think he is. I glance at the folder on the bench and remember the details written inside. I suddenly let my protesting feelings out. I'm sorry, Killian, but I won't be preparing you today. I'll speak to my employer and get someone else to see to you very shortly. I make to leave when he stands, and the chair flies backwards. I stop, frozen with fear. I can see the dead, make contact with them physically, but never has one been able to affect my surroundings before. As you can see and have probably read in that file, I'm very good with my hands. Killing comes naturally to me, like your song choices. You will prepare me, or I'll have to kill again. Who I kill, however, will be your choice. My feet grind around. The last thing I want is anyone to die. This man's record shows he's not only capable of living out his threat, but he would also enjoy it. So, what music are you going to play for me, then? He asks, twirling my iPod. I dash forward and snatch it out of his hands. That's not for you to touch. I realize the close proximity and step away. All the while, his mouth hangs open ever so slightly, either in shock or mild curiosity. The iPod's wheel is warm and sweaty when it should be cold and unmolested. I wipe the taint down my trousers and bring the thing to life. The scrolling is endless, song after song, every one the same unrecognizable title. I click out of recent and into playlists, scrolling down to preparation, and spin through the selections. Again, each song is the same. Each playlist, each grouping, every single track, the same unrecognizable title. I throw it angrily on the metal desk, which clangs in sympathy. What have you done? Killian snickers and snatches up the iPod. Well, that's the other thing I've heard. You play a song for the dead, something that sums them up, resonates with them. Well, this is my song. He hooks it up to the speakers and presses play. A pluck of a high string sets my nerves on end. I've heard that note before. A jarring vibration of gravelly bass tells me I'm right. It's the song I've heard before. The notes are atonal, almost. A peculiar screech of strings that aren't tuned. A high-pitched scream. A deep bass and something else. Something I missed last time.
I made this just for you. Or should I say, they did,
Killian says, watching for my reaction. I'm freaking out as other, more peculiar notes add a halting, uneasy manner to the song. The hairs on my arms stand up as a scream pierces the morgue. Killian closes his eyes and swings his hands like a conductor in an orchestra. The haunting melody rises. Voices randomly enter. A scream here, a moan there. Guttural throats and nightmarish howls weave the melody in a grotesque fashion. Each one of my victims gave their voice to make this piece, he says, rocking to the diabolical tune. I made them scream, made them bleed and plead and beg. A maniacal grin spreads across his face as he dances around the morgue. I shuffle to the cooler doors and press against them, covering my ears. A song rises and falls with each desperate voice. Women scream for their lives. Men plead and break down into sobs. The high notes I thought were strings sing out again. But they're not strings. They're the screams of a child. I can't breathe. Can't think. I want the song to end. Think, I tell myself. What can you do to stop this? From deep inside, an old song bubbles up. I grasp onto it. It's one my father would sing to me when we went camping. The melody is thin, like a ghost. A few notes I vaguely remember. I hum them, fingers in my ears. More of the melody comes back. My fractal hum turns louder, loud enough for me to hear it in my ears. Suddenly, there's another voice and a cold grasp at my wrist. My eyes fly open to see Jordan standing next to me. We lock eyes, and he encourages me to hum with him. I do, and I feel another hand at my shoulder. Linda smiles and hums. The evil song drowns a little, but Killian still spins like a madman. I dig deep. The tune vibrates in my throat. The first verse, a happy time with family. Another set of hands lay on my back, another soul to help. The chorus plays in my head. It speaks of love and hope and the bond of time. More hands aid me. More voices sing my song. Killian realizes what's happening. The music is too loud. It drowns out his song. But not only that, there are people surrounding him. Angry people. Disfigured, mangled people. Close your eyes. Linda's hand pulls my chin around to face her. She smiles softly. Close your eyes, Sean. You don't need to see this. My eyes close, but I still feel them surrounding me. Their song, my song, weaves in and out. The chords are joyous, the words catchy. I let it build in me as Killian's screams pierce the air. Then, slowly, they die like the wail of a siren. My song ends. The bass note drifts out and stills. When I open my eyes, everyone's gone. I sit in the stillness. The air is clean and smells like blossoms. My heart rapidly calms. I can't help but wonder why this happened to me. What did Killian want from me? Was it just to torture me for being able to give the dead peace? Or did he think I could give him the same peace, even though he was such a cruel man? I glance at his still body on the metal tray.
There's only one thing I can give him. The wheels of the metal bed rattle down the corridor. I stoop under the low arch leading to the furnaces. I turn one on and slide Killian's body into the flames. The red folder on his chest smolders with the intense heat, the edges of the photos curling with yellow.
Sean, what are you doing?
John stands behind me, hand on hips, his thin eyebrows lowered in agitation. Cremation, I say, thinking fast.
His file said burial, Sean.
I glance into the furnace. The flames encapsulate Killian's body. The file is almost gone.
Are you sure? I ask with pretend surprise. I've never been wrong before.
John's eyebrows relax and he looks up, thinking.
Yeah, you've actually never made a mistake. Where's the file? Let me check just in case.
It's right there, I say, searching the metal bed. Oh, wait, I add, glancing into the furnace. John crouches and looks into the flames.
You burnt them? They were my only records, Sean. How am I going to build a prison now?
I feigned an apologetic smile. Maybe you can ask your friend if they have another record, or you can just trust me and bill them for a cremation, I say, shrugging one shoulder. John chews on his lip and then nods.
If you say it was a cremation, I'm good with that, but next time, please be a bit more careful.
I nod as a wave of relief washes over me. Yes, sir, I'll make sure to be more careful. John nods.
When you're done, I have another client waiting for you.
I nod back, and John leaves me alone, staring into the flames. Killian's body pops with bursts of green-tinged flames. I hope that the fires that burn him are eternal for what he did to those people. I wait until the body is entirely gone, before going back to the morgue and the new body to dress.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You've been listening to I Play Music to the Dead, Today They Played One Back, by Grant Hinton. Grant Hinton is a horror fiction author from London, England, but who now resides in Perth, Western Australia. Counting Corpses is the first installment of his debut serial killer thriller collection. Grant also has a collection of short stories, Unread, that was published in 2019, and a collection of reimagined dark fairy tales entitled Scary Tales that was published in 2020. Now, here's Shortcut by Micah Edwards. And I looked and beheld a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him. Book of Revelation, 6:8. Alert, traffic ahead. Estimated travel time has increased by 15 minutes. Simon sighed and drummed his fingers on his steering wheel. The traffic wasn't ahead so much as it was here, no matter what the GPS thought. He was sitting in the middle of it, creeping forward at what felt like a walking pace. He'd tried to leave late in the day to avoid the traffic, but clearly, other people had had the same idea. Alert, traffic ahead. Estimated travel time has increased by 7 minutes.
I don't even want to be here, thought Simon.
His sister's annual tacky sweater party was not, to his mind, a good enough reason to drive 4 hours up Interstate 95. But it was family tradition, as his mother had acerbically reminded him over the phone, and not having her harp on him for months on end was absolutely a good enough reason for a 4-hour drive.
Or so it had seemed at the time. Now, drifting along at dusk in a river of brake lights, Simon was reconsidering. Alert! Traffic ahead. Estimated travel time has increased by 28 minutes. Simon angrily tapped the Find Alternate Routes button, not for the first time on this trip. As before, the GPS paused for a moment before responding with a cheery, "No better route found," in its unpleasant near-human voice. "Try again," Simon snarled, hammering on the button as if hitting it multiple times would make it work harder or find something new. "Deep breaths," he remembered, calming himself. "Getting mad at inanimate objects is foolish and unproductive. My energies can be better spent by considering the situation and searching." "New route found," chirped the GPS, interrupting Simon's train of thought. "Estimated arrival time, 6:52 p.m. Would you like to take this?" A wash of relief hit Simon. "Yes," he exclaimed, tapping the OK prompt. The line on the map shifted, veering off to the right. "In 1/4 mile, exit onto Old Chapel Road." With a happy sigh, Simon maneuvered his way over and exited the freeway traffic jam. Driving even 35 miles per hour on the two-lane road was an almost palpable joy after the freeway's glacial pace. He had barely gotten up to speed, though, when a crossroads appeared ahead, marked by a stop sign. On the right side of the road stood a dilapidated gas station, in poor enough condition that Simon was unsure if it was even open. The prices seemed about right, though, and his tank was at 1/4 full, so he pulled in to stretch his legs and hopefully fill up the tank before continuing on. Although the setting sun was still visible, the station stood in deep shadow, loomed over by an imposing, crumbling church on the opposite side of the road. Electric lights gleamed fitfully above the single pump and inside the ramshackle convenience store. The gas pump had no place to swipe a credit card, but its display glowed to life when Simon lifted the nozzle and raised the handle, so he plugged it into his tank and waited for it to fill. As Simon waited, he found his gaze irresistibly drawn to the church across the way. Something about the towering structure demanded his attention. The setting sun backlit the church, casting the front into blackness even as it lit the huge stained glass windows, portals of fire set in a coal-black facade. Even with the shadows stealing detail, though, the church's decay was evident. The edges of the roof showed clear disrepair, occasional panes were broken out of the windows, and the whole chapel was leaning forward slightly, as if intent on whispering a secret to the gas station. Simon couldn't shake the uncomfortable feeling that the church was leaning closer, even as he watched, or that he was being somehow drawn into it. The flare of color from its windows caught his eyes, pinning his attention, holding him in place as the building slowly loomed nearer, nearer. Its doors were in front of him, and its walls were folding in around him like leathery wings, and as the doors started to crack open, he could smell the church's awful cold breath, a stench of decay and horrible anticipation. Behind Simon, the gas pump thunked heavily as the automatic shutoff disengaged the flow of gas, startling him out of his reverie. He was still standing at his car, neither he nor the church having moved, and he laughed anxiously at his daydream as he uncoupled his car from the pump and headed inside to pay. The door opened reluctantly to reveal a store that, like the exterior of the station, appeared at first glance to be abandoned. Although the lights were on, every drink cooler was dark and silent, clearly not running. No music played over the speakers, no newspapers sat in the racks, and the shelves were dusty and stacked with products 2 or more years past their expiration dates. Were it not for the balding man staring at him from behind the counter, there would have been nothing to suggest that the store was open instead of having been accidentally left unlocked when it was shut down. Simon fumbled for his wallet as he approached the counter, pulling out cash. This didn't look like the sort of place that took credit cards, and he wanted to make this transaction as swift as possible. The man behind the counter stirred from his inanimate state as Simon neared him, slowly coming to life like a robot powering up. "Pump one, the only pump,"
said Simon, dropping the bills onto the counter. The man's eyes never left Simon's face as his hand spidered across the counter, the fingertips feeling their way towards the money. He touched each bill in turn before picking them up, then rang the charge up on the cash register and began counting out the change, tallying a running total of each bill and coin aloud in a dusty voice. All the while, he stared straight ahead, eyes locked with Simon's. Simon wondered if the attendant was blind, but as he shifted uneasily from foot to foot, the man's eyes tracked his unerringly. The attendant pushed the change across the counter to Simon, who took it and said automatically, "Enjoy your night." A small smile started to form on the man's face. "Enjoy your night," he repeated in a rasp. The smile grew slowly wider, then wider still. "Enjoy your night." Simon grinned nervously back at him, backing out of the store as the attendant's lips peeled back in a rictus, his mouth stretching to reveal yellowed teeth and reddened gums. As Simon reached the door and turned to escape, he saw a trickle of blood forming at the center of the attendant's lower lip where the skin had cracked. But his smile was still widening. "Enjoy your night," he called one last time, as Simon forced the door open and fled into the parking lot. The decrepit church loomed over Simon as he fumbled with his keys, but he steadfastly refused to look at it or to turn his gaze back to the store. He kept his focus on his hands until he was in the car, then on the road immediately ahead until he was through the crossroads and the church was safely behind him. Only then did he raise his eyes to the rearview mirror, and for a moment, he had a terrifying idea that he would see the church as he had seen it while pumping gas, looming tall and immediate over the back of his car, its doors opening like a toothless maw to swallow him whole. The vision popped like a soap bubble as he instead saw only the road behind him, with the church and gas station growing small in the distance, just as they should. Simon breathed a sigh of relief, even as he laughed off his ridiculous idea. With the terror he'd felt receding as quickly as the buildings behind him, the whole thing suddenly felt blown out of proportion. One weird guy in one weird building, well, two, and I'm suddenly paranoid. Should have picked up some tinfoil at that station to make a hat. The GPS suddenly spoke up again. "In half a mile, make a right onto State Route 117. A quick look at the map overview suggested that this path would roughly parallel the freeway for some time, following the roads which had existed before the interstate system was put into place. On the map, the freeway still glowed red with traffic, and Simon was happy to follow the country roads until that cleared up. On an ordinary day, the freeway might be a vastly superior method of getting from place to place, but when it backed up, it was good to have a program that knew alternate ways around. "In 2 miles, make a left onto State Route 84. The hilly road hid the turn ahead, undulating up and down as it snaked over uneven ground and twisted through alternating fields and clusters of forest. Over the fields, Simon could still see the freeway off in the distance, laden with cars. "How's the freeway so flat?" he wondered. "When it's so nearby, the landscape can't be that different over there. Better machines and better paving, I suppose. Also, the advantage of starting fresh. These country roads have probably been here since Johnny Appleseed trampled down the grass, walking up and down these hills. They've just been expanded outwards, widened, but they're still the same underneath. In 0.1 miles, make a left onto unnamed road." Simon cast a sharp look at the GPS. Had it just stuttered? The last thing he needed was to be stranded out in the middle of the country with his technological guide on the fritz. Everything seemed fine on the display, though, so it had probably just been a momentary error. Anyway, he had just stopped for gas, and it wasn't like there were a lot of intersections to confuse him if he ended up needing to backtrack. So Simon put the thought from his mind as he turned down the indicated road. If the earlier country roads were walking trails that had outgrown their origins, then this one was much closer to its roots. It was probably intended to be 2 lanes, but no one had bothered to paint any lines down its center,
and Simon had doubts the two vehicles of any significant size could pass each other without trading paint or making generous use of the shoulders of the road. Or one shoulder, anyway, although the right side appeared basically open and serviceable, if muddy, the left side hosted a small country graveyard perilously close to the asphalt. The nearest headstones couldn't have been more than 3 feet off of the road, and in the fading daylight and the brief flash as his headlights crossed them, Simon couldn't be certain that he was looking at the backs of the stones. He sincerely hoped that he was, though, because otherwise the road had been paved right over the foot of the graves. Simon toyed with that thought for a moment, uncomfortable without being quite sure why. Bodies were bodies, and bones were bones, and the world was built over hidden corpses and forgotten burials from earlier eras. There was something more immediate about this, though, that made it seem worse. It was the grave markers, he decided. This was no forgotten gravesite. The people who put in the road knew that the graves were there, and still ran the road insultingly close to those final resting places. It seemed indecent, and Simon told himself it was because it was unkind to those who were still alive, who might come to see their relative, their mother or father, and have the exhaust of passing trucks belched in their faces as they kneeled at the grave. Of course, he mused, it was probably local labor that put this road in. The people who paved this road are probably descended from the ones in the cemetery. Inane, though the thought was, it helped. At least that way, it wasn't an inexorable external force imposing itself unbidden, sacrificing the past to feed the all-consuming present. If the road ran too close to the cemetery, it was by the choice of those who the cemetery was for. It wasn't up to Simon to apologize or judge. The road was here because this was where they had wanted it. Although, looking around, he couldn't see that they'd necessarily had a lot of choice. The graveyard was surprisingly expansive, and though Simon had turned down this road easily half a mile ago, the graves still crowded up against the left side of the road, tombstones jostling for space like tourists peering in at a strange exhibition. For a one-road town, they sure had a lot of people die here, thought Simon. The comment was meant to be a humorously wry observation, but even inside of his own head, it sounded ominous and threatening. A curve ahead allowed the headlights to spill off of the road, illuminating hundreds of tombstones stretching out into the dark, each one standing silent sentinel over a dead body. Each one marked a spot where a once living person had been buried in the ground, left to wither and rot until nothing of them remained in the world, neither work nor word, and all that remained to show that they had ever lived was a chiseled rock mounted over the spot where they had been consigned to the earth. Simon shook himself mentally and turned on the radio to chase the unnerving images out of his head. He set it to Seek, and as the radio flipped through static in search of a station putting out a decent signal, Simon wondered what was wrong with his thoughts tonight. It was unlike him to turn so morbid at the sight of a few graves. He tried to think of his niece and nephew who were waiting for him at the end of the trip, and of the hideous sweaters his sister had no doubt delighted in finding for them. But his mind kept interrupting with thoughts of the horrible old church from before. Its image was as clear as if he was still looking at it, the stained glass windows inflamed within its shadowed walls. But its shadow was filled with tombstones, and it reached out to cover the entire world. The radio relieved the silence by cutting on in the middle of a Beatles song, slightly staticky, but acceptably so. Scene porters with looking glass ties. Suddenly, someone is there at the turnstile, the girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Simon relaxed to the familiar song, settling back in his seat and letting go of a tension he hadn't realized had been building up in his back. And then, terror wrapped icy hands around his spine at the next line. Guess who's gonna die? It's Simon. He sat bolt upright, his eyes jerking involuntarily to the radio as if he could hear better by staring at it. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy in the sky with diamonds, sang the radio, as if nothing was wrong.
That is not what I heard, Simon said aloud, shakily. On the radio, John crooned on, a gentle denial of the words Simon thought he'd heard. As the song spun on, it became easier to believe that it really had been nothing but a strange artifact of the static, a momentary distortion of the words coupled with the creepy ambiance of the graveyard at night, leading to that patently ridiculous mishearing of the lyrics. People who think that the radio is talking to them are crazy, Simon, Simon said to himself. Get a grip. What, are you afraid of the dark all of a sudden? The GPS chose this moment to chime in, speaking over the radio. In 1 mile, stay straight on unnamed road. Simon glared at the device. He considered smacking it to attempt to resettle whatever was causing it to glitch, but restrained himself with an effort. Deep breaths. The GPS might be repeating syllables, but it was still tracking him clearly along the route, which was the most important function. Even if it was telling him useless directions like, don't stop driving forward. Not like there's anywhere else to go, thought Simon. The graveyard still stretched past the reach of his headlights alongside the road, stone teeth marching into oblivion. Somewhere along the way, he'd lost the lights of the freeway. And was the road slightly narrower than it had started? Before, it had seemed unlikely that two trucks could pass each other. Now, Simon was pretty sure that even two sedans couldn't manage it, not without pulling off to the shoulder. And when had there begun to be graves on the right side of the road, too? Simon could feel his breath coming faster, his heartbeat accelerating. This is stupid. It's a country road. A country road through the world's largest graveyard. And why had it gotten dark so suddenly? Surely dusk should have lasted longer than this. Nothing was right here. Simon could feel a cold breeze on the back of his neck, and the air in the car stank of the rot that had emanated from the church when its doors had opened to swallow him inside. That was a daydream. It never happened. And then Simon let out a strangled grunt, a guttural sound of fear, for as his eyes flickered to the rearview mirror, he saw there, cyclopean and terrible, the church. It loomed behind him, impossibly close, casting its shadow ahead to envelop his car. The steering wheel jerked under his grip, and he fought to keep the car on the road as he recovered from his panic. And when he felt the temptation to look into the mirror again growing strong in his mind, he grunted once more and backhanded the mirror from the windshield before he could succumb. The mirror rebounded off of the far window of the car with the sound of breaking glass, bounced off of the passenger's seat, and tumbled into the footwell, the cracked face winking up at Simon as it fell. Simon struggled to get his breathing back under control, to relax his foot from the accelerator and loosen his death grip on the steering wheel. The song on the radio faded, came back, then slipped beneath the static waves, leaving only a quiet hissing from the speakers.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
In 1/4 mile, stay straight on unnamed aimed road. Simon was preparing to fiddle with the radio when suddenly his attention was jerked back to the road in front of him by something up ahead in the road. A long, dark streak reaching diagonally across the asphalt. It glistened in his headlights with a reddish hue, a 2-foot-wide, ragged ribbon crawling out into the darkness. Someone hit a deer, wounded it, and it dragged itself away, Simon told himself, slowing his speed as he scanned the side of the road for the unfortunate animal. The streak of blood went on and on, an incredible amount. In 1/10 of a mile, stay straight on unnamed road. Stop telling me that, Simon growled at the GPS. Up ahead, an indistinct figure sprawled against one of the tombstones hugging the right side of the road. As he drew closer, Simon's stomach gave a sickening lurch. It was no deer. Someone had hit a person and left her to die.
In 50 feet, stay, 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 stay. Ignoring the malfunctioning GPS, Simon put the car in park and jumped out, hurrying around the front of his car to where the woman lay in a tangle of limbs and blood-soaked cloth, her once white dress torn and stained with blood and the dirt of a quarter mile of road. He fumbled in his pocket for his phone to call 911, knowing even as he pulled it out that it was far too late. No one could have lost that much blood and lived, but he reached for her neck anyway to check for a pulse. Instead of skin, Simon's hand touched something hard and knobbly, and tiny pinpricks wrapped around his fingers. He jerked his hand back in surprise, knocking into the woman's chin and lolling her head back. Beneath the tumbled hair, instead of a woman's face, a skeleton leered up at him, its bones yellowed, the remains of its skin leathery and ripped. It was covered with the dirt of the grave, wearing not a white dress, but instead a winding sheet. Inside its skull, things clicked and shuffled away from the light, and to his horror, Simon saw that when he had touched its neck, a beetle had climbed onto his hand and was currently trying to scuttle up his sleeve. He shrieked and leapt back, shaking his arm and sending the beetle flying into the night. At his feet, the blood-stained corpse rustled in its sheet. Simon looked down in disgust, thinking to see more bugs. But his phone dropped from nerveless fingers as he saw it reach a rotting hand up to the tombstone it rested against, and slowly began to haul itself to its feet. The thing had made it to its knees before Simon shook off his paralysis and fled for his car, thankful that he had left the door open. He gunned the gas and sped away as the creature twisted and lunged for the door. Its fingers scrabbled past just inches from the handle as the car roared by, spinning the corpse off to crash back against the graves. Go, 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 19 miles, then stay straight on an unnamed road. Impossible, impossible! Simon's mind gibbered as he fled down the road, speeding past rank after rank of tombstones, sepulchres, and mausoleums. Simon felt for his phone to call for help, to call his sister, to call anyone, but it was lying in the road where he had dropped it, and there was no way he was going back for it, even if it hadn't probably been run over when he had peeled out. Or even if he could go back, for that matter. The road was even narrower now, barely more than a single lane, and the graves began scant feet from Simon's car on either side. With careful back and forth, a car could still be turned around here, but Simon had already crossed two more bloody streaks, and things were moving in the night at the edges of his vision. Terrified, he pressed down harder on the gas pedal, hoping to simply outrun whatever was happening. As he hurtled on, the road closed in still further, dropping to a single lane. A milky white moon drifted up over the horizon, casting light across the landscape, and Simon gasped in horror. The graveyard surrounded him as far as he could see, stretching to the horizon. Rounded rectangles of marble and granite massed upon the bleak, dead ground, with larger shapes of tombs and crypts hunched at intervals, stony giants skulking along the ground. Pillars, obelisks, and statues on plinths rose among them like orators addressing a crowd, and in their shadows, avoiding even the moonlight, creatures less than human moved with an unseemly grace. Through the whispering static on the radio, a lone church bell began tolling. The sound was low and sonorous, filling the car and infusing the susurrus of the static with a feeling of malice. Simon slapped at the console until the radio shut off, but the sound continued, as somewhere out in the moonlit darkness, the bell of that terrible church knelled. In response, the creatures came forth from the shadows to course across the graveyard, hellish servants responding to their master's call. They were made of bones and rags, bound together with grave worms and pieces of shrouds, and yet they moved like water flowing downhill, smoothly and with deceptive speed.
Their bones whispered against each other as they ran, making a kind of music. The song it sang was of death, not merely of a person, but of humanity itself, of the entire world, of the planets and the sun and all the stars. It sang of an empty universe, cold and forgotten, with the shadow of the graveyard enshrouding it all. And beneath it all was glee, desire, and a frightening belief that this was how things should always have been, that life was a mistake, and death the true state of things. Again and again the bell tolled, a constant backbeat to the song of the bones, and the corpses ran up and over the hills of the graveyard, massing in even greater numbers. Simon drove on in terror, hands white-knuckled on the steering wheel, trying and failing to ignore that hell itself was rising outside of his car. The road began to rise, and Simon found himself driving across a berm separating the two sides of the cemetery. It was only inches wider than his car. The slightest mistake would send him tumbling down a hillside into the graves below. It writhed sinuously across the graveyard, lazy curves daring Simon to maintain his speed and risk the plummet. Simon slowed as much as he dared, speeding up again after each curve in a futile attempt to increase the distance between his car and the tide of monsters. Below him, a deep howl began to grow, rising as one from the throats of the pursuing creatures. Where the bones whispered of death, this sang of blood, hot and cloying, viscous rivers of it washing across the world. Simon shivered uncontrollably and stepped on the accelerator again, risking the corners a bit faster. In one half mile, don't look back. Simon's eyes flew instinctively to where his rearview mirror should be, but found nothing but the stump of the handle sticking from the windshield. He flicked his eyes to each side mirror, but saw nothing but the glint of bone and stone as moonlight gleamed off of the army behind him. A rumble began to grow, almost subsonic, shaking the car as if an earthquake was starting. Panicked, Simon twisted around to see what was happening, taking his eyes from the road. Don't. The GPS chanted mindlessly, but Simon had already looked and was transfixed by the sight. Behind him, the ground itself was rising, heaping up in great grave-covered hillocks as if something titanic were rising from beneath it. The truth, he soon saw, was even worse. The graveyard itself was standing, forming into a colossal creature that drew from the ground around it to grow continuously larger. The army of corpses swarmed at its feet like cockroaches, sliding seamlessly aside to avoid each tremendous step as it strode above them. It moved amorphously, flowing from step to step with ever-changing limbs, and with each stride, it closed the distance between itself and Simon. The only constants in its body were its eyes, which burned like the stained glass windows of the church, and which were fixed unerringly on Simon. "Turn right to remain on unnamed road." Simon's attention was jolted back by the GPS's unusually strident cry, just in time to feel his left wheel leave the road and spin uselessly on the grass. He jerked the wheel to the right as the back left tire joined the front on the grassy slope, and the car tilted sickeningly to the side.
No,
screamed Simon, hauling on the wheel, and the car lurched back onto the road, now angled to shoot directly off the right side. He screamed again, wordlessly this time, pulling the wheel back to the left and stomping on the accelerator as if it could save him. The car fishtailed, but ended up back on the road, pointing straight along it. Heart hammering, Simon accelerated once more, trying to outpace the ground-shaking steps behind him. Even with the car racing as fast as he dared go, Simon could feel the monster gaining on him. He began to smell the stale, dank air of the church's breath closing in around him, wrapping him in its awful miasma.
The thought of breathing it in filled him with terror, and he held his breath as he drove onward, ever faster. Still, the monster gained, until the thudding of each step made the car jump and the wheel jerk slightly under Simon's hands. Black spots were beginning to dance in front of his eyes, but he knew that to breathe in was death, and so he grimly spurred the car even faster, determined to make it as far as possible. If he was to succumb, it would not be easily. Abruptly, the GPS spoke up once more. In 100 feet, turn left, 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 down no road. 50 feet. Left, now, now, now. There was nothing but graveyard to his left, but ahead of him, the road stretched on into the night, and Simon's lungs were burning. In desperation, he twisted the wheel to the left, and the car sailed off of the road momentarily before jolting onto the hill with a crash that drove almost the last bit of air from Simon's lungs. Astoundingly, there was a walking path ahead of him, winding precariously through the tombstones. Behind him, the monster roared, and the blood howl of the corpses ran under it like a promise of doom. Simon slalomed wildly through the graves, his throat clenched as his lungs frantically tried to suck in air, the world-shaking footsteps of the monster crashing behind him. And then, suddenly, a black gate was before him, and his car was bursting through. The airbags went off with the impact, and Simon gasped in a lungful of acrid chemical air. Coughing, he frantically pushed down the airbag, freed himself from his seatbelt, and leapt out of the car, falling to the ground in his haste to escape. His car, the front fender dented and one headlight smashed out, sat in the entrance to the graveyard. A broken chain lay on the ground behind it, and the wrought iron gates hung open. The moon rode high in the sky, illuminating a quiet scene. Peaceful graves, tastefully placed trees, a caretaker's house on a hill in the center. Nothing moved. Nothing stirred. Shakily, Simon climbed back into his car and drove slowly to his sister's house. He left the radio off, and the silence was broken only by the occasional directions of the GPS. Pulling up to the gate of her community, he punched in the code for her townhouse to be buzzed in. The speaker crackled to life. "Simon, I'm glad you're here. Was traffic bad?" The GPS spoke up once more. "Resuming original path, this detour has saved you 4 minutes. "Simon? Is that you? Simon?" his sister asked. But Simon put his head down on the steering wheel and laughed until he wept.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
That was Shortcut by Micah Edwards. Micah Edwards graduated from William and Mary with a degree in English and no particular plans to use it. He now finds himself occupying various roles as an author, a comedian, and a database administrator, depending on the day of the week. He resides in Richmond, Virginia, the world's premier home of authors named Micah Edwards. Nothing quite like some restless corpses to get the party going, right? And it's always a party with Micah Edwards and Grant Hinton, our guests of honor this evening. But for now, I've gotta go. I hear the chauffeur coming to my door. He says there's room for maybe just one more. Assuming that I survive the night, I'll be back next week with a freshly butchered slab of Horror Hill for you. Until then, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley.
got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. Note that any writing utilizing artificial intelligence is ineligible. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media, and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot, and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. That's ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. And we can talk details. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.